Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 4 of Game On with Cody and John. This episode's big deal, the main event. We'll talk about how to make your next gaming event the best ever. And on Buy, Try, or Deny, we'll do battle for the Iron Throne in A Game of Thrones, the living card game.
All this and much more coming up on Game On with Cody and John.
Howdy gamers, you're listening to Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all kinds of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, role-playing games, anything of that nature. How you doing today, Cody?
Pretty good. The Colts were victorious this weekend.
It was an amazing...
Somehow.
I wouldn't say it was a deserved victory, but...
Hey, I'll take it. Thank you, Sage Rosenfels of the Houston Texans, the human Texans.
they showed their humanity this week. Now, you know, it's funny because when I was watching the game with some buddies from church, I was talking about Sage Rosenfels because he was the quarterback at Iowa State. And since I went to Texas, they played each other a few times. And he was actually a really good quarterback, but he looked really sad there towards
Indeed.
The end.
Well, the Sage was not...
Not so sage.
Not so sagey.
Does
sage ripen? I don't know. another event we had, your birthday. How did it go?
It went well. I passed over from death to life from 31 to 32. And
more like life to death.
Right? More like life to death. But, you know, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to do the big gaming extravaganza that I wanted to. Just ran out of time with planning and that kind of stuff. And it kind of brought to mind the fact that I don't think I'm very good at planning game events.
Well, this cannot stand. We are going to fix that with this episode. The big deal, we're going to talk about the main event.
That's right. Gaming events, game nights, what goes into a great game night, and we're just going to talk about all the details of putting on a great game event. And we're not going to stop there. We're actually going to plan a gaming event here on the podcast that we are going to actually do in a few weeks.
All right, we will get into that just a little bit later. And in our Buy, Try, or Deny, we'll talk about the first installment in the living card game series, A Game of Thrones.
That's right, a brand new format from Fantasy Flight Games.
We promise this is the last one for a while. We're going through our Gen Con purchases, and hey, we're Fantasy Flight Games fans.
Right. In the coming weeks, you'll be seeing some new game companies and some different stuff, some variety there.
You know I'm not afraid to throw the deny down.
No, I know. You threw it down last
bam.
Week. Yeah, episode 3, the first deny came
threats.
Right down. Exactly.
Not really.
You did get death threats.
Well, let's kick it off with the Game On Inbox right now.
It's time for the Game On Inbox. Here you'll find gaming news, information, discussion, as well as feedback from you, the listener. Send questions, comments, and brilliant ideas to gameoninbox@gmail.com. That's gameoninbox@gmail.com. Let's double-click on our inbox and see what we find.
Well, let's open up the Game On Inbox and start with some games we played this week. First, John, you have an admission for our listeners, don't you?
An admission?
You're a Cylon.
I am not a Cylon.
No, you most definitely are a Cylon,
no,
and I proved it when we played Battlestar Galactica this weekend.
That's right, you did. But it sure did take you long enough.
Okay, all right, let me throw this down. Like, we played Battlestar Galactica, the first game we reviewed in Episode 1, and the whole time, using my Gaius Baltar special power, I knew that John was a Cylon.
He knew after about 10 minutes into the game that I had gotten one of the You Are a Cylon loyalty cards.
Right. And so I spent the next hour trying to convince the other players to put him in the brig, and in the process got myself thrown into the brig.
See, and I thought this was a really interesting commentary on Cody as a gamer, because we were playing with three guys that have been gaming with Cody for years. They'd known Cody for a lot longer than I have. And so he is telling them over and over again, John is a Cylon. John is a Cylon. And, or actually, I was Galen Tyrell. So Tyrell is a Cylon.
Sure.
Cylon. And they just were looking at him like, Maybe. I mean, you know, Cody could be putting on a pretty good act there, so I was having a great time with that, especially when I kept winking at him saying, oh, I'm a Cylon.
Yeah, and of course the Cylons were victorious in a rather close game, it turned out.
Very close game, so, yeah. But it really just strengthens our original opinion of the game that it's a definite buy. It's a ton of fun, and I know a lot of you guys are probably chomping at the bit because it won't be coming out for another month or so, but get your pre-order in if you can. It's a great game.
You have to buy this game. Now, John, you've also been doing some gaming at work, mostly your Tuesday afternoon Magic.
Yeah, we've been playing Magic the Gathering during lunchtime, and we've gotten pretty much a steady four guy group together to play, and so I had an opportunity to play today. And I guess the big news from this past week is that the new Shards of Alara set came out this past weekend, and so
tie up single L.
That's right, that guy single L, our buddy, he has turned into a Magic playing fool. This guy's got like he's got mana symbols in his eyes. He's
help
into
him.
It. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that the new Shards of Alara set, for those of you who do play Magic, is a little bit different than the previous sets in that previous sets have had these theme decks that are different colors and they're pre-selected cards, pre-constructed decks, and they're doing it a slightly differently for this Shards of Alara set, where they're selling what they call intro packs. And that's going to be about a 40-card, still a theme deck, a 40-card theme deck, and that'll be packaged with an unopened booster pack. And you also will get like a little starter's guide to the game. I think it's meant to try to get new players into the game.
And does it come with your own IV so you can just, you know, hook the drug right in? And,
It should. Yeah, no. Just getting back into the game, it's after so many years, I realize why I got out of the game, right. Initially.
Does it come with a second job so you can buy all the cards?
I need that, I think. So anyway, but for those of you that are Magic fans, it's a really good set. It introduces the concept of three-color cards that require three different colors of mana to be able to get them out. And so that's kind of an interesting concept.
Yeah, there's an older mechanic that they're bringing back there with the three-color.
Oh, was that an older mechanic?
It's they had kind of the gold cards back in the day, but enough about Magic.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. Good game, kind of expensive.
Yeah, right. Speaking of Wizards type of games, I did play a lot of RPGA lately.
Yeah, you've been involved in that with your fiance
with your family. Big 4th edition D&D-er, so we spent a whole weekend just playing a bunch of that and getting our characters leveled up, so that was always good.
How was the 4th edition rules going? How you've been playing that for a little while now. How is that going?
People are... they're already starting to kind of master the rules to where they know all the ins and outs and kind of nooks and crannies of it. It's rather impressive. People are already kind of min-maxing their characters. And
that's cool. I think I may have to jump in on that. I've never really been a big RPGA player, but maybe next time you've got a game going, I'll join you.
Definitely, yeah. The next set of adventures comes out, I believe, in just the next few weeks. I think the next set for tiers, like levels 5 through 8 or some business, so we'll have to get you into that. Now, we said last episode that you'd purchased a Wii.
That's right.
And how's that been going for you?
Oh, I've been having a whole lot of fun with it, although I did have a bit of a scare last night.
Oh, what happened?
Where I come home and I was going to do a little bit of playing on the Wii, and I noticed that the light wasn't lit up on the Wii. Ooh. And so I tried unplugging it from the wall and plugging it back in, still no light. Uh-oh. And I tried plugging into another outlet, still no light. Anyway, it looks like I needed to reset the AC adapter. I'm not sure what happened, but it was a scary moment for a second. But no, I did get the new Madden 09 all-play version for the Wii for my birthday. Hmm. And so I've been playing with that. It's a lot of fun. It's a very different sort of feel than a normal console game, because you're using the Wii-ness of the Wii.
I'm not sure that's a word.
Do we need an explicit tag now?
No, I don't know.
But you know, so with the two hands and everything, so it's a lot of fun. It takes a little bit of practice, but Cody, you and I'll have to play some of that.
Definitely.
A little bit.
And this weekend we also got to play a little Hollow Earth Expedition.
Oh yeah.
My monthly game of that. It's a role-playing game. It's more of a pulp kind of Indiana Jones, the Mummy sort of a feel. We played this weekend, and John, I think you had a good time. It looked like it, at least.
I had a great time, and my character in this game is an intrepid scientist-turned-missionary named Jack Goodnight.
That is a pulp name.
That's a pulp name if I've ever heard one. And one of his nice flaws that he has is that he only has one arm.
Exactly.
Nice backstory where it got blown off in some sort of a science experiment.
Science is dangerous.
Yeah. So when we're like running through cave dwellings and trying to climb rope ladders and that kind of stuff, it makes for some interesting storytelling.
Indeed. Now, speaking of Hollow Earth Expedition and other pulp role-playing games, there is a new web magazine, I guess would be the best way to call it, and it is called Danger Magnet, and this is actually the name of one of the flaws in the game, where a character can take this flaw called Danger Magnet, and danger just seems to follow them. Like, they're the one who gets targeted by the native, or
they're the one that always ends up with like the finding the dynamite, right, underneath the truck that they're riding in.
Exactly. And you can check these guys out at dangermagnet.com. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. And this is basically a free web magazine that you can get inspiration for your pulp game. You can get new items, new adventures, new characters. And it's not game specific. So you could use it for any pulp RPG, not just Hollow Earth Expedition. But I definitely recommend you check it out.
Yeah, check it out. It looks like a really good publication. Real high quality there.
Definitely. We're going to get into some gaming news. John, what do you got for us?
All right, well, one big piece of news that's coming up this month is the Spiel 2008, I guess it's Spiel 2008,
Spiel,
which is a really, really large gaming convention in Essen, Germany.
We're going, right?
Oh, I wish. I would love to.
We're taking the game on jet.
The game on Concorde. Do they still have Concordes?
I don't know. This isn't plane on. Oh, it's game on.
Well, anyway, so I would love to go, but it's probably not this year. But
next,
it is
next
year,
maybe.
Maybe not. But it's the largest game convention in the world for board games and card games, things like that. It brings in around 150,000 gamers every year. And it's actually, I think Gen Con's the biggest convention in the U.S. for that sort of a thing.
Yeah, we're still the gaming capital of the world here in Indianapolis. Make no mistake.
Yeah, don't be fooled. Don't be fooled. Because we're here.
We allow them to have the spiel at Essen.
Exactly. If we ever move to Essen, we can start calling Essen the gaming capital of the world. But as long as Game On is here, then, you know. Anyway, so that's going on. So any of you listeners out there that happen to have gone to Essen, we'd love to hear any stories that have. You know, there's lots of stuff that goes on. Lots of new games get released there. So if you ever want to email us at the Game On Inbox and let
us
know.
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
That's it.
Allow me that one.
I'll give you that one. But we would love to hear from you about Essen Spiel. As far as game release news goes, I found out that there is a new edition, the fourth edition of the game, Bang.
Oh, thank goodness.
That's going to be coming out somewhere in the fourth quarter of 2008 by DaVinci Games. This new edition is going to include some player mats that have some really nice artwork on them for every player to have, and also bullet tokens, because for those of you who played the game, you kind of keep track of your life with these bullets, and in the past you've had to sort of use the back of a card, and it's, for those who've ever played Euchre, you kind of have to keep track of it that way. But they'll actually have these nice bullet tokens for this game.
Hopefully they keep the Italian on the cards.
I think they are, because that's actually one of our favorite things about playing Bang is we love to use Italian accents, because all the cards have Italian on them.
Really,
it's like a spaghetti western
too.
So
you know, Pigione.
Pigione, la banga,
mancato.
So it's a terrifically fun game. So you guys,
so if we have any listeners in Italy, they're just shaking their heads.
I know, they're like, these guys.
Stupid Americans.
It's a fantastic card game, so check it out when that new fourth edition comes out. And also, one other interesting thing that I noticed yesterday when I was at my local Meijer store. Meijer's a large discount chain, kind of like Walmart, sort of here in the Midwest. I saw the game Snorta, which is a kind of a sort of a kids / party game from Out of the Box Games, where you go around and you have to make animal noises. It's not really my cup of tea, but you know, I think a lot of
people... Not on your top 10.
Not in my top 10, but it's a really good game, and it's definitely a boon for Out of the Box Games to be able to get another game into large market stores. They're, of course, the producer of the great party game Apples to Apples. So if you get a chance to check it out for that new version of Snorta.
All right, now we'll get into some listener feedback. Our new guild on BoardGameGeek.com now has over 30 members.
Yeah, I think it's got 35 the last 35, time I checked.
Fantastic. So. Not bad for
Don't be geeks. Fooled by when you go into the guild page and you see the number of members listed as 4.
Yeah.
That's not right. There's
I was getting real discouraged there for a few days. I'm like, 4 people? Really? Yeah, and two of them's us?
Pretty sad. But no, I think they don't update that page very often, but we're at about 35 members.
Fantastic. We've already got some good conversations going on over there, and we would love for you to be a part of them. So just go on over to BoardGameGeek.com and do a search in the guilds for Game On with Cody and John, and you can find all the conversation you would ever need right there.
Yep, and we'll also put a direct link to the guild in the show notes so you can check it out directly from there at GameOnPodcast.com.
That's right. And speaking of discussions, we had a lot of good discussion about theme from our last episode and how important it is. And a lot of different opinions out there. Some people just say, give me the straight mechanics, and some people are like, it's I gotta have a reason to play, you know.
Yeah, and I thought it was real interesting what one listener wrote, where he mentioned that he thought we might have been sort of misusing the word theme, where we really meant setting. And I think that might be right, and a lot of times the nomenclature that we're using is important, but it definitely seems like you listeners out there are thinking about theme, and that's an important part of your gaming.
Definitely. And we're hoping to get a lot of feedback on our big deal this week, which we'll get into just a little bit later. So it's not too late to jump in on that discussion and many, many more over on the BoardGameGeek.com guild.
That's right. And you might find that in addition to our buy, try, or deny segment that we do here on the podcast, we're also going to be throwing out some buy, try, or deny home edition
Indeed.
Threads. Cody's actually got one up right now regarding Twilight Imperium 3rd edition.
Sure. Yeah. If you've played the game, let us know what you think about it. This is something in relation to our big deal topic. We want to plan a game of this by the time the year is over, and we just need someone to give us some input on it.
Yep. And being that we are the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer, we value your opinion just as much as perhaps you value ours regarding game reviews. So this is sort of your way to do your own game review for us and help us out with our game purchases too. So cool. Thanks for that.
No problem. Now, last episode we had a contest.
Oh, yes.
In relation to the guild. And we have selected a winner at random.
That's right. We really do appreciate all the people that logged on to BoardGameGeek.com, went to our guild, and posted in the Episode 3 contest thread. That's all you had to do to enter this contest.
That's right. And we've come up with our winner, John. Who's our big winner?
The winner for this episode is, and the recipient of a new copy of Fairy Tale by Z-Man Games, Todd Goff.
Todd Gunslinger Goff.
That's right, Todd. Congratulations. You are the winner of Fairy Tale, this great card game from Z-Man Games. What we need you to do is to email us at the Game On Inbox at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Are we done with that?
No, say it one more time. It sounds so good.
GameOnInbox@gmail.com.
Love the radio voice. And if you could email us, Todd, and just give us your address, and we will get that game in the mail to you.
Fantastic. And now what do you say we get into the big deal?
Let's do it. And now it's time for the big deal. Whether it's an interview, an in-depth review of a convention or gaming event, or a discussion on a gaming-related topic, every episode of Game On, we will do our very best to answer that eternal, burning question, what's the big deal?
All right, it's time for this episode's big deal, the main event.
That's very nice.
I've been working on that.
Yeah, this episode we're going to be talking about planning a great game event. Now, we don't mean like a full-fledged convention or something, no. But just you want to get some folks together for a one-off party at your house where you're going to play a lot of games. What's that supposed to look like? How do you plan that? We're just going to discuss that. Sure. And there is a reason why.
Yes, and the reason is John and I want to plan the Game On Game-tacular.
That's Game On Game-tacular 2008.
.com. Not really.
No, don't look. It's not there.
No, we have decided we'd like to plan a game night here at John's house. I guess I'm deciding I'm going to plan it here at John's
house. Oh, yeah. Thanks. Okay, sure.
No problem.
Let me go tell my wife.
if you could cook 10 pizzas, that would be great. No, we're going to invite, what did you say, 10, 15 people?
I think that's what we're going to aim for is about 10 to 15 right. folks. We don't have there's not a whole lot of space in the house for gaming. We'll have to maybe get a couple tables in, but I think that's about what we could hold.
So we've got the idea we want a game party. we want 10 to 15 people, and we're going to play games. Seems simple. We're done, right?
It would seem like that would be simple, but we've got a lot of other things we need to talk about and things to consider when planning a great game night. And let's start off by discussing what are some challenges that we're going to face with this game on Gametacular.
Well, you know, outside of the normal coordinating schedules, I think the biggest thing to consider is people are, I want to say, at different levels with games. You'll have people ranging from they don't know games outside of Chutes and Ladders and Clue to people who play Advanced Squad Leader every month, you know.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot before in previous episodes about gaming being a inclusive culture, but at the same time there being a lot of things that separate gamers. And I think that what you're talking about is really true, that you're going to have folks that are on maybe a different part of the learning curve.
Right. Yeah, there's a very fine balance between getting everyone involved and keeping everyone interested, but not boring the more elite gamer.
Right. Well, I think that's maybe a main thing to think about is what exactly is the purpose of having a game night? You know, is it to be able to play certain games, or is it to so that everybody will have a good time, or, you know, just kind of coming up with what is the main goal of having a game night? You know, not to overcomplicate it, but I think that's really important. I think for our game night, we just want to have friends over, and we have friends that are non-gamers, that are heavily into gaming, that are kind of in the middle, and we want just everybody to be able to come and have a good time. And I think that therein lies just a huge challenge.
Sure. So we've decided we're going to do a certain amount of games. We're going to pick them ahead of time and even have some of them set up when people get here.
Right. I have a pretty large game collection, and actually my board game collection is pretty much right there in the middle of our living room. We have a big bookshelf where everything is. And actually, like I've said before, I need another bookshelf. But anyways, we're not going to have that entire collection open to everybody during the game event, because Cody and I even find that this is a problem when just the two of us get together to play games, that we stand there in front of the giant wall of games and say, "So, what do you want to play?"
I don't know.
What about this one?
No. What about Carcassonne?
Okay. No. That would never happen.
No, no, no.
But, you know, we have a hard time just between the two of us picking games. And I've been in larger gaming events or just game nights where you have, you know, eight people there and eight different opinions, and they all want to play different things. But no one is really so passionate about it that they are going to assert themselves. So you end up with just a whole bunch of people sitting around not playing games.
Right. So we figure if we pick the games ahead of time, we'll pick a good variety of games. And if we already have them set up, that way people can just get here, jump in, and get right into the gaming. And then we can worry about, I guess, different game selections later on. We can at least warm them up with something.
Right. And so that's kind of one question that I wanted to put out there is what are some good warm-up games? What are some good things that will just sort of get everybody warmed up and not real deep games, not deep strategy games to start off, but what's going to get people into the mood and into the swing of things?
Descent.
Negative.
StarCraft the board game.
Negative.
Advanced Civilization.
Well, that one might work, but no. Yeah. No, I'm thinking of things more like Ticket to Ride.
Oh, yeah.
Or even going lighter than that, something like For Sale, which is a great little card game. Ink and Gold, I think, would be a good...
Oh, the classic.
Yeah, that'd be a good way to get everybody sort of involved. Because you just sort of need to break the ice with something that's real, has a real low barrier to entry for folks that have never played before. And once they're in the swing of things, then you can move up to something a little bit more complex.
There you go. Now, how complex do you think we should get?
I think that very much depends on the audience. And the folks that we're sort of considering inviting to this, I think, like I said before, it's a really wide range of folks, so it makes it challenging. I think because of that, because you're going to have some folks that are not gamers, you never want to go too high up the food chain, I guess, or, right, or, you know, too deep into something as complicated as, like, I don't know, Shogun or something. Like, even Shogun's not that complicated, but Power
not that
Grid.
Not fun either.
okay. I like Shogun, but
I forgive you.
Something like Power Grid might be a little bit too complex for a gaming group, but something like Shadows Over Camelot might be a good thing.
You're the traitor. And another thing to consider is to those warm-up games that you start with, have those available throughout the night, because you may have a lot of non-gamers that come and that's their comfort zone. It's like, oh yeah, you know, I'll play What's in Wagers. Oh, I'll play Say Anything, you know. Yeah. They could just play that all night and be happy with it.
Yeah, you know, and that brings up a point about having separate game tables going on during an event. Is, do you think it's important to have one person who teaches all the games? Should there be a designated teacher at each table, or what would be the best way to do that? Because I know that I love to teach games. That's one of the things. That's one of the reasons why you'll probably hear my voice more on By Try or Deny doing the game review.
I'm terrible at it. I'm just awful at it.
So, I mean, Cody usually defers to me, but, you know, should I be walking around just teaching games the entire time, or what would be what do you think?
Oh, no, I think you can, if you can swing it to have a game teacher at each table, I think is fine. And then, you know, once people have learned the game, they can pretty much run on their own. I wouldn't say you would have to run around and teach games all night. That I don't think that'd be that fun for you in the long run.
Yeah, that's true.
You'd probably like to play games, but.
So I think that there's some games when you're planning a game night with a whole bunch of people that you probably want to avoid. I think that you mentioned Descent. I know you were joking, but a game like Descent, Twilight Imperium, Third Edition, you know, any of those gigantic box fantasy flight games, or something that's a civilization, a big long war game or something like that. You know, it's like that game itself is a party unto itself.
Right. I mean, unless everyone is coming with the express purpose to play one of those games, I would cut that out, definitely.
Yeah, so you're automatically going to eliminate those games. I would say that a maximum length for a game at a game party or event would probably be an hour and a half.
I'd agree. Yeah.
Any longer than that, and you're probably going to have another group that is done playing their game, standing around waiting, or, you know, and I think that if you have a lot of non-gamers or casual gamers, if they get involved in a game that takes 2 to 3 hours, I think they will have probably gone a little bit too deep into the pool and will probably maybe be getting a little bit bored, possibly.
Right, yeah. Yeah, one of the main points of importance is that make sure everyone's always doing something. If they're not playing a game, even if they're having fun watching a game, you know, that's fun, but you don't want anyone just kind of sitting in a chair, just kind of like, when's the next game going to be, you know, just kind of.
Right. You know, that actually brings up another thing I hadn't thought about, and we can discuss this about how we want to do it with the Gametacular, mm-hmm. is what about something like a Wii or Guitar Hero on a video game console? Is that something you would want to incorporate into a game night, or is it best to leave those things separated, the video games and the board games?
Personally, I think very sparingly added in. I think, I don't know what this says about the state of board games, but I think if you introduce something like that into the equation, not many people will be doing the board games. I mean,
you think so?
I don't know. I think so. It's a, you know, if we're all trying to teach new board games, it's like, hey, I've got Wii Bowling, you know. It's like, well, I could see a bunch of people saying, yeah, I know bowling, you know, that's easy.
Yeah, I think the Wii itself is something that is almost a little bit revolutionary when it comes to that, because it is conducive to party game play and interaction. And my mom came over to my house for her birthday. We threw a little bit of a party, and at the end, the kids wanted to show her how to use the Wii. She'd never seen it before, and my mom is absolutely not a gamer at all. She is not a computer gamer, nothing mm-hmm. of that nature, but she was really enjoying Wii Bowling. And so I think that kind of a console really lends itself to a party atmosphere. But I agree with you that I think it should be sort of separated from the board game. If you're there to have that board gaming social experience, it's sort of like if someone wanted to pull out their books and dice and play a one-off D&D adventure in the middle of a board game
Let's
night.
Do it.
I don't think that'd be a really good idea. And
I'm a fighter. Let's go.
Okay. Maybe for Game On, Gametacular 2009.
All right.
We'll put it on the list. But
yeah, party's forming now.
So I agree with you that I think that for this game event that we're going to do, we're going to put the Wii and the PS2 and the PS3 away and just stick to the board games.
You have a PS3? You've been hiding it.
I've been holding out on you. No, I don't. I just said that.
Well, you mentioned family, and one of the things that may come across when you're planning your game party is kids. Wonderful bundles of joy.
Oh, absolutely.
You have a pair. Well,
I do. And my oldest is 5, and he is getting to the point now where he can play some games. Like, I was actually able to get through a game of Zuloretto with him, and I think he really understood the concepts of things. He needed a little bit of help with the decisions, but I think he was on the right track. He can also play HeroScape real well, especially if you play it out like a D&D style RPG adventure.
He's going to be a good role player, I think.
He loves to tell stories and say how his superhero is destroying the other bad guy or whatever. But in this sort of a setting where we're going to have a bunch of adults over to play Euro-style board games and Ameritrash board games.
Ameritrash.
One side of the room is going to have, it's going to be like an agrarian revolt between the Agricola players are going to come and...
I'm putting up a fence.
Okay, that's fine.
The Great Divide, part 2.
We'll have a big white line in the middle of the room.
If you want to have fun, come over here.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
But, you know, my son, I think he would have a really great time participating. I think that we're probably going to take the kids and put them in another room, or maybe they'll go and visit grandma that night or something like that. But that does bring up a real interesting point. If you're having a game event and you have a lot of friends or family that have small children, what do you do with those children? Do you find a way to incorporate them into your games, or do you, you know, sequester them into another room and have them do their own thing? Do you have someone designated to watch them that maybe runs some kids' games with them?
I think that's
them?
Your best option if you can get someone to do that.
Yeah.
I think that's the trick.
Pay them handsomely.
Exactly. You know. I think, you know, having them do their own mini game event or... like I said, I don't know how successful, you know, if everyone's playing a game of Kingsburg or something, you know, having the kids along it. I don't know how much that. I don't have kids, so take my opinion with a grain of salt. But
yeah, it's definitely something to consider, though, if you're doing your own game event, because I think that if you don't provide something for the kids to do, your attendance might be down on your game night because some folks, I know that me and my wife, we sometimes have a little bit of trouble finding a babysitter, or we don't want to bother someone to watch our kids, and so I think sometimes we choose to not go to certain events that are for grown-ups just because we have our kids with us. So something to consider. We're still working out the details here on what we're going to do for our game event with the kids, but we'll keep you posted on what we do there.
Sure. And then there are other minor issues to consider, like decorations. Do you do decorations? Do you have little dice sitting out? I don't know.
I think it depends on how formal you want to make the game event. If it's just the day before, you shoot out an email saying, "Hey, I just wanted to have some folks over for games. Let's get together." I don't think that you really need any sort of official decorations or anything. But if you're really trying to plan a game party, like a real event where you're sending out invitations, where it can be a full evening of fun for everybody, I think that, you know, decorations can really enhance things. If they're thematic, you know, you can go to your local party store and find stuff with dice on it or something like that. Or if you were planning a themed gaming night with maybe all science fiction games or all Euro games or something like that, then you can get decorations that go along with that.
Sure. What do you think we could do for the Gametacular? Bunch of Geo logos everywhere.
I hadn't really thought that far in advance. I'm not sure what we can do for that. I know that my wife, for my birthday this year, she made a very valiant attempt at a D6 cake.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was, and she it wasn't quite an exact cube, so she was a little bit disappointed with the way it turned out, but I thought it looked cool, and she had Oreos as the pips on the die.
Oh, nice.
On either side, so you know, that would be something to have some neat appetizers or something like that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think food almost becomes a secondary thing. You know, you don't want to get food on the games, and you know, as long as you have something to munch on, or
no Cheetos.
Keep
the Cheetos away from the game board,
please, for all of our sakes.
Yeah,
and you know, just other general atmosphere things. You know, do you have music playing in the background? Do you?
Well, you know, if you're playing a Touch of Evil, the Supernatural game, you can get your own CD with that and play that music.
Or you could play something good and...
murder! But, yeah, I mean, do you want some soft music playing, or is that distracting? I think I found in previous game nights that I've been involved in, it's probably best not to have any music going on because it's harder to hear, but some things to consider there.
But obviously, we're just in the infant planning stages of this, and this is where you, the listeners, will come in here.
So we mentioned earlier in the Game On Inbox that we were going to have a contest for this episode, but that we weren't going to tell you yet. Well, now we're going to tell you about
Your time has come.
The time has come. Over the course of this episode, we have been mentioning our game event that we're planning, and we've been calling it the Game On Game-tacular. Well, we think that's kind of a lame name. We just threw that in there because it was the best thing we could think of. What we would really love is for you, the Game On listeners, to name our game event. So we plan on having our game night sometime in the next month or so. We haven't really set the date for it yet, but it's just going to be a local thing with some friends and family. So what we'd like for you to do is to go to our guild on BoardGameGeek.com and look for the thread that says Episode 4 Contest. And I'll post in there a little description of what the contest is, which is basically post your idea for what the name of our game event should be.
Because Game-tacular is not going to cut it.
It's not. It's not top-notch.
We got to step it up. And we believe you, the listeners, can best give us a name that will befit such a great inaugural event.
And seeing it as it is an inaugural event, this could be a name that will live on for years upon years. This could be the Gen Con of this generation.
It could be. Hopefully with a better name than Gen Con. But what John and I are going to do is we will pick our favorite by the next episode, and you will win a brand new copy of
Fiji by Friedemann Fries.
Friedemann Fries.
This is a great card game that includes tiki masks and shrunken heads from Griot Grande Games.
Two things I enjoy.
So if you post in our Game On Guild in the Episode 4 contest thread, and if you're have the best idea for a game event name for us, then you'll win a copy of Fiji.
It's just that easy.
We make it simple here on Game On.
We are the uncommon podcast for the common gamer.
So I've heard.
All right, what do you say we get into this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny?
I say we do it. Buy, Try, or Deny. Every episode of Game On, we review a game and offer our opinions to help you decide whether a game is worth spending your hard-earned money on. If we say that a game is a buy, we definitely recommend that you go to your local gaming store or online retailer and purchase it immediately. If we say the game is a try, we think it's a good game and definitely worth playing, but the game may or may not appeal to a certain audience, or it has one or two flaws that may keep you from enjoying it fully. If we deny a game, there is definitely something seriously wrong with the game, and we recommend that you let it continue to collect dust on your game store's shelf. So let's get started. Welcome to Buy, Try, or Deny. This episode we'll be talking about a Game of Thrones, the living card game.
It's alive!
And this game was published in 2008. It actually has not been officially released yet. It's supposed to come out later this month in October.
We're podcasting from the future.
That's right. Welcome to the future of a Game of Thrones.
Marty!
That's what we call the living card game.
Now, it's a very interesting concept that's been put out. It's basically all of the elements of a traditional collectible card game, but without the collectability of it.
Yep, this game was designed originally in 2003 by Eric Lang and Nate French. And when the game first came out, it came in very traditional collectible card game format with starter decks and boosters and, you know, basically the same thing you've seen from games like Magic and Legend of the Five Rings, things like that. And it's been relatively popular with tournaments at Gen Con and other tournaments that we've seen. But there are many people, including myself, who really like the gameplay of a collectible card game. I know I've mentioned to you guys that I've been playing a little bit of Magic lately, but I really don't have the time or money to sink into really getting into a CCG.
I'm right there with you.
And so Fantasy Flight's apparently recognized this, and so they've designed this new format that's meant to keep CCG players interested with tournament play and things like that, but it's also for engaging new players, especially those who are fans of board games and non-collectible card games. So that's where this living card game concept comes in. So in a traditional CCG format, you release starter decks and boosters, and every few months you release a new series of these blind buy boosters, so you don't know when you open up a pack what you're going to get. The way that they've designed the living card game is that they will start with what they call a core set. And the a Game of Thrones core set, for example, comes with four decks of cards for four players, and they are complete decks. They are already pre-constructed and therefore immediate play. And so the core set itself can be played without any additional cards, and you can get a lot of replayability out of that game.
Right. You technically, you would never need to buy another set. You could just use that core set and play indefinitely with that.
And for a board gamer like me, that's a really good thing, because I'm not someone who really wants to spend a lot of extra money trying to tweak my decks and things like that. But if you are a CCG player and are interested in that, what they're going to do is, after they've released the core set, every month they're going to be releasing what are called chapter packs. And these are going to be 40-card decks that are already predetermined. So it's not a blind buy. When you buy a particular chapter pack, you'll be able to know ahead of time exactly what cards come in that pack. So you can use those to customize your deck and to be able to have that sort of dynamic quality with CCG. But if you're not into that, then you can buy the core game and have enough cards to really get you through for as long as you want to play. So the A Game of Thrones living card game is based upon a series of books. The series is called A Song of Ice and Fire by George R.R. Martin, and the first book is called A Game of Thrones, and there have been four or five books that have come out since then. And so I've actually read the first book, and I'm about a quarter of the way through the second book.
And I've not read any of them.
So Cody and I were definitely coming at this game from different perspectives, and so we're going to talk a little bit later about, you know, do you really need to have read the books to be able to understand this game? So we'll go ahead and start off like we always do by talking a little bit about the game components. There's not as many components in this game as there have been in some of our previous reviews. But when you open up the box, the box is of a normal board game size. So a typical Fantasy Flight square box.
Yeah, it looks more like a board game than a card game just right out of the gate.
Yeah, and when you open it up, you'll sort of see that they probably didn't need as much real estate box-wise as they really have used in this case. Because all you're going to find in the box is you have a small board. Now, this is a card game, but there is a board element when you get into the multiplayer game. So there's a small board, a small square board, very colorful. You're going to get some titles pawns. We're going to be talking about this new concept in the game, for those of you who are familiar with the original game, of titles that's introduced in this core set. And there's six title pawns, and they're about the size of, you know, medium to large size chess pieces.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, and they're made out of a real nice resin. They're silver and a resin material. Real good quality there. You're also going to get some gold tokens. Not real gold. They're cardboard tokens to represent gold. And you're also going to get some cardboard tokens to represent power, which is sort of the points that you're going to be trying to get in this game. And so then you're also going to get four decks of cards. That's really the main meat of the game. One for each house or family that are represented in the game. And so that's going to include a house card, seven plot cards, and then about 50 other cards in your deck. And then you're also going to get some title cards that are going to accompany those pawns, sort of as almost like a cheat sheet, so you know what those pawns do ahead of time. So in the living card game of A Game of Thrones, you're going to control one of six powerful families or houses in the mythical country of Westeros. And all these families are vying for power and control, all wanting to be the house whose king sits on the Iron Throne.
That seems uncomfortable.
It seems like they would want to have some
padded Iron Throne.
Hopefully padded.
Be a very comfortable throne.
But the goal of the game is to obtain a total of 15 power tokens. And these tokens are going to be won by winning power challenges, winning undefended challenges, and during the domination phase of the game. But just sit tight. We're going to go through all the phases of the game real briefly, and so you'll be able to understand that. But unlike a collectible card game like World of Warcraft or Magic the Gathering, where you're trying to defeat your opponent by essentially killing them, this game is about being the first to accumulate the most power, which may or may not involve direct combat or military combat. In this respect, it has a kind of a different feel and strategy from any other card game that I've played. Okay, and so really there's only four main kinds of cards in the game. There are character cards, which are going to represent different characters from the books, and they're going to have different abilities on them to be able to initiate challenges. It's going to be these challenges that are going to allow you to obtain power and get ahead in the game. So you have character cards. you have location cards, and these are going to be cards that will sit in your play area and will give you resources like gold and influence and things like that. And you also have item or attachment cards. These would be things like swords, or maybe you have a wolf that accompanies you. And you can attach these things to character cards that will give them special abilities and upgrades and things like that. And then the fourth kind of card is an event card, which is something that can be played during the game using terms from Magic the Gathering as a benchmark. It's something like a sorcery or an instant or an interrupt, something like that. These are little game-changing cards that can cause different things to happen during the game in your favor. Okay, so at the beginning of the game, you're going to have a setup phase that's going to get some things onto the table that you're going to use from the very start. So everybody's going to draw 7 cards, and then at this point, all the players are going to look at their cards, and they are allowed to play up to 5 gold worth of characters and locations down in front of them. At the top left of each card is a gold cost, which is the amount of gold that you need to spend to get the card onto the table. So you don't start off with any gold, but you can already start off with and use up to 5 gold to get.
This was a nice mechanic.
Yeah.
It really helps you get a jump start, and you don't have to worry about really micromanaging things from the get-go. It's like you start off with a nice base. And
yeah, you don't have to like have this ramp-up phase of trying to get stuff out on the table. Everybody's going to start off with something on the table already.
Exactly.
Yep. So after you do that setup phase, you'll draw back up to 7 cards. And I want to pause just for a second here and just mention that this core set and the game that I'm describing here in the review is really meant to be ideally a 4-player game. And so with all 4 decks in play. And when I start to talk about the titles in a minute, you'll see that those are really meant to be part of a 4-player game. There are rules for 3-player games and that are a little bit different. And then for a 2-player game, it's going to be quite different. And I'll go over those differences towards the end there, because Cody and I actually played in a 4-player game with our gaming buddy Single L and another new gaming buddy who we are terming the Safety Guy.
You got to be safe.
That's right. So Single L and the Safety Guy were there with us to play this initial game. And then Cody and I also followed up a little bit later with a 2-player game to see how that felt. So moving on from that, after you finished your setup phase, you're going to start the first turn. And the very first game phase is called the plot step. And along with your deck of cards, you're going to have a separate deck of 7 cards that are called plot cards. These are real easy to distinguish between the other cards because they're printed horizontally. And so you're going to select one of those 7 plot cards to be played this turn. Everybody selects them simultaneously, and then they're all simultaneously revealed. Now, there are a few pieces of information on the plot card that are important. On the top left of the card, there are 3 little symbols with numbers. So the leftmost symbol is a gold symbol. That's going to be the base amount of gold that you're going to get this turn with which to get cards onto the table. The second icon is a little diamond, which is your initiative number. So once all the cards are revealed, you're going to compare the initiative number with the other people, and whoever has the highest initiative will be the start player for that turn. The third number is called the claim number. And this is a very unique mechanic that I haven't really seen in any other sort of game, but it sort of determines the strength of your attacks or the strength or a magnitude of the reward that you'll get if you're successful in your attacks this turn. So in addition to all 3 of those numbers, at the bottom of the card, you're also going to have some text that'll be a standing event that will happen for the entire turn. So during this plot step, all of the players reveal their plot cards, and then whoever has the highest initiative number will be the start player, and that player will then determine what order the text on the card is resolved. So these things, there's lots of different things. Like any other collectible card game, everything's governed by what the cards say. So we're not going to get into the minutiae of what particular plots do or whatever, but needless to say, there's lots of different events, and you can learn those just by reading the cards. So after all of that has been resolved, then it's going to be time for the second part of the plot step, which is selecting titles. So we're just going to go real briefly into these titles and what they mean. Basically, the board is going to set in the center of the table, and you're going to have these 6 pawns that sit on the board. It's a little bit difficult to describe visually how the board looks, but the arrangement of these pawns on the board will determine kind of what relationship you have with other players during the game. So if you select a particular title, and the titles are things like Master of Coin, Lord Commander of the King's Guard, Crown Regent, things like that, Master of Whispers. If you select one of these...
Master of Whispers, really?
Master of Whispers, yeah.
I talk like this, I'm a master at it.
Yeah, like, well, in the book there's a guy named Lord Varys, and he's like Anyway, yeah. Yes, Master of Whispers.
Yes.
Read the book, it's good.
Okay.
And so if you select a particular title, it's going to immediately create a relationship with another player, or perhaps multiple other players. So for example, if you get the title Hand of the King, then what that means is that the Hand of the King supports the Master of Whispers, and the Hand of the King opposes the Master of Coin. Now, this all may seem kind of confusing, but if you look directly at the board or at the different cards that you get with the titles, it's very easy to figure this out. And what this basically means is that if you support another title, so if you're Hand of the King, you're going to support the Master of Whispers, that means that for that turn, you are not allowed to attack the Master of Whispers character, the player. And in addition, you can do some things on your turn where if the Master of Whispers player is attacked, you can help to defend them. And this can be sort of an effort to help yourself by maybe preventing another player from gaining power or maybe even winning the game. So that's how support works. And it only lasts for just that one turn. Contrarily, if you have opposes, for example, the Hand of the King opposes the Master of Coin, then that means that if you decide to attack the Master of Coin that turn, then you're going to get a bonus if you are successful in that challenge. You'll get some extra power tokens or extra bonuses if you do that. So it gives you an incentive to be an adversary with that player for this particular turn. So these titles really provide a lot of variety in the gameplay because it creates these relationships. In addition, each of the titles is going to give you some sort of a bonus. It might give you more strength to your characters, or it might give you extra money or stuff like that. It's all very thematic too, along with those titles. But this title mechanic is the one thing that makes this game very different from the original collectible card game. This is a new element that they've added to the game. So that's the plot step. You'll reveal your plot card, resolve all that stuff, get your titles, which will determine those relationships, and then you're ready to move on to the draw step. This step is done simultaneously, and all players will draw two cards. So after the draw step is the marshaling phase. And the marshaling phase is not done simultaneously. It'll start with a start player. And then each player will, in order, do these steps. You'll start off by collecting gold from the treasury, these gold tokens, by counting up the amount of gold that's on your plot card, plus any gold bonuses that you might be getting from other cards like your location cards or other things like that. You'll add all those up and you'll take that number of gold tokens from the treasury. Then you're going to spend those gold tokens to bring cards out onto the table. This will be character cards, attachments, locations, all these kinds of things you'll be bringing out with your gold. Now you can spend all of your gold if you want to, but it might be in your best interest to save back one or two gold because there's certain events and things that might trigger based upon the amount of gold that you have. So after the marshaling phase will be the challenge phase. This is probably the biggest meat of the game, and this is the way that you're going to get the main way that you're going to get power and influence and things like that during the game. So the start player will start, and you have an option on your turn to do one of each of the three kinds of challenges. So it's three ways of attacking your player, if you want to think of it that way. The first one is called a military challenge. And that can be performed by any character that has the red military symbol.
Batman symbol.
on their card. And Cody's right that the symbol for military does look like a red Batman symbol.
We called it the Batman challenge in both games.
We couldn't stop calling it that. So if we pull this game out again and play it, I'm sure that it'll always be from now on the Batman challenge. So... you can complete a military challenge.
Batman.
And what you do is, when you do any kind of challenge, is you will declare another player and say, I'm initiating a challenge against you, and you'll say what kind of challenge. So for a military challenge, you're actually attacking the other characters that a player has. So once you declare your challenge, you're going to do what's called kneeling your characters.
Not tapping.
Not tapping, because tapping
is a registered trademark of Wizards of the Coast.
Right, and so we wouldn't be tapping the cards.
No.
Instead, you're going to be kneeling the cards, which looks a lot like tapping. And
you will move it 90 degrees to the right.
That's right. And you're going to tap... Sorry.
No, we've been over this.
You're going to kneel...
Thank you.
...a certain number of cards that have that military symbol on them. Only those cards can participate in a military challenge. And those cards will have a particular strength value. There's a little shield on the cards that will say the number of their strength. So the attacker will kneel a certain number of cards for the military challenge. And then the defending player will have the option of defending, in which case they can kneel any number of character cards that also have the military symbol on them. And then once all the kneeling is done, you'll add up the strength totals on either side. And so once all the kneeling is done, you'll add up the strength on either side to determine who wins. If the attacker wins, then the defender has to kill a certain number of characters on their side, on the defender's side. And that number is determined by the claim number that's on the attacker's plot card. So that's where this claim number comes into play. So if the attacker has a claim number of 1 and they win a military challenge against another player, that defending player has to then take one of their character cards and kill it and put it in the dead pile. The second kind of challenge is called an influence challenge. And the rulebook mentions that this is an attack on another player's choices. So it's done exactly the same way as a military challenge. The icon for influence is green. It looks like an eyeball. And so you'll initiate them exactly the same way, and you'll kneel the characters that you want to participate in the challenge. The defender will kneel characters, and then you'll compare the strength values of those cards. In this case, if the attacker wins an influence challenge, then they will get to discard a card at random out of the defender's hand equal to the number that they have of their claim number. So if they have a claim number of 1, they get to discard at random 1 card from the defender's hand. So that's the second type of challenge. The third type, and probably the most important type of challenge in the game, is the power challenge. And the icon for this is blue and has a little crown on it. And remember, power is what you're trying to get in the game to win the game. The first player to 15 power tokens is the winner. Now, if you win a power challenge, then you will get to take a power token from the player equal to the number equal to that claim number. So if they have a claim number 1, you can take 1 power token, and you're taking that directly from the other player. And these power tokens are usually kept on your house card. Now, there are some power tokens that actually will reside on a character card, but don't worry about that for the purpose of this review. You're basically going to be taking power from another player. Now, so that's how you're going to get power in a power challenge, but there's also another way that you can get power. Anytime that you initiate an attack of any kind, either military, influence, or power, and it is undefended, then in addition to winning that challenge and getting the reward, whatever that might be, you also will get an additional power token from the bank, basically, from the common pile in the center. So being able to initiate and win undefended challenges is another way to gain additional power during your turn. So that's kind of a long explanation of how the challenge phase work, but this is really the main meat of the game. And everything, like I said, is driven by what the cards say. So you'll have attachments that do certain things. You'll have special abilities like stealth and deadly and other things like that. And you kind of have to look in the rule book and find out what those things mean, but everything's going to be governed by what the cards say. So each player is going to go around and perform all of their challenges. You have an option of doing one of each of those challenges every turn. And once it gets back around to the start player, that will be the end of the challenge phase, and you'll move on to the dominance phase. So in the dominance phase, what you're going to do is look at your characters and see which ones are not kneeling, which ones are still standing up. And you're going to add up all the strength of your standing characters. And then you're also going to add to that the number of gold tokens that you have left in your gold pool if you didn't spend all of them. And whoever has the highest number, they will win dominance, and they will claim one power token from the pool. So that's another way that you can get power during your turn. After that, phase six is the standing phase, and similar to the untap phase in Magic.
Oh, easy.
Okay, we don't want to... Easy. Sorry. And you're basically going to take all of your kneeled cards, and you're going to stand them back up. And then the very last phase is called taxation. And so all excess gold that you might have left over from your gold pool. And we found that in most turns, we didn't have a whole lot of gold left over.
No, not really.
You'll return that to the treasury. So you don't get to carry over gold from one turn to another. But anyway, so those are the main seven phases in the game. I know it seems like a long turn, and it is when you first start playing.
Yeah, but once you really get the hang of it, it went surprisingly fast tonight when we played a two-player game of it.
Yeah.
It just zipped by.
And one commentary I think we want to make on it is that if you're sitting down to this game and you have four players and none of you have ever played before, give yourself a good amount of time to get through the rules.
It's got a big learning curve, like most CCGs do. It takes a little bit of time.
Yeah, and I had done a little bit of a test game with my wife the night before that we played, so I was the one teaching the rules to everybody, but it still took a real long time. And we ended up not even playing a full game to 15, just because literally we had been playing for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
But don't let that dissuade you. I don't think that the game would take nearly that long. No. I think it's just a matter of, it's got a little bit of a learning curve because of that CCG aspect to it. So that's basically how the gameplay for a Game of Thrones, the living card game, works. Cody, what did you think of it?
I liked it. I've had a background with CCGs. Like I said, the first game I ever really got into was Magic way back in the day. And I can see a lot of similarities, but there's a lot of things that are different as far as collectible card games go with this. I guess it's not a collectible card game, but in spirit, it is. It's only in marketing where I think it's really not. I enjoyed it. Like I said, learning the rules was a bit of a slog just because there were four of us who had never really sat down and played a full game. But once we got through that and we really started to see how the different mechanics and strategy worked, I was warming up to it. I like the concept of the living card game. That's what really drew me in and made me want to play it.
Yeah, that's very much the case for me as well. Like I said, I'm not really interested in pouring a whole lot more money into a CCG. So the idea of having this core set in my collection that I can pull out, and now that I know the game, I can teach that to new players, hand them decks of cards, and they'll be able to play immediately. That is very appealing. And so I really liked the game as well. It does have a very different feel from something like a Magic or a World of Warcraft trading card game. It's as someone who's read at least some of the books, I think that it does enhance the experience when you can look at the cards and know the characters. And you can sort of see that they've put some thought into the abilities of the characters, you know, based upon what they do in the book. So you'll be able to match those things up and say, oh yeah, you know, Eddard Stark totally would do that. I can see why he has that ability. But if you've never read the books at all, I would say it would not detract from the experience. And actually I had a Single L offer me some comments today when we were at work. And that was one of the main things that he said, was that, you know, he had never read the books, but he really still enjoyed the game, and he didn't find that it detracted from that. And so he really liked the game, and as a, like I said, a relatively new gamer and also a big fan of Magic the Gathering, he said he would definitely play this again.
Yeah, I haven't read the books either, and you can still play the game for what it is. It's a personal note. I like to know a little, you know, oh, why does that character have that? So personally, maybe I should just read the books. I don't know, but this may not be the exact theme I like, but I like the system enough to where if you tacked on a different theme or a setting to it, I may become a little more invested in it.
So you know, we also had the opportunity to play this game with our new gaming buddy, the Safety Guy.
The Safety Guy.
And the Safety Guy said that he really enjoyed the game as well, and that he would play it again, thought that the design was done very well. He did say that he thought that it being a four-player game added some interesting dynamics because, you know, if you initiate all these challenges and you've knelt all of your cards, then, you know, you then have to wait for three other players to come around, and who could be attacking you, and you might be undefended. So there's this balance of, you know, what are you going to assert yourself with, and what are you going to save back and defend with?
Yeah, it adds some interesting strategy elements. It's like you really have to know how much to put forward and how much you want to defend, and then even how much you want to leave open for the dominance phase, because you can, you know, get your power that way if you can survive by keeping one of your characters standing instead of kneeling him for the whole turn.
Yeah, so overall, I think the safety guy said that he would definitely play this again. And he's a big Magic player as well, so he's got some experience in the collectible card game realm. And so anyway, we just hope you guys enjoyed this look into a slightly different kind of game than just the traditional board game. We wanted to give a little bit of variety as far as doing a review on this sort of game. One other item of note to mention is the difference between a 4-player game of this and then a 2-player game. I mentioned that the rules change a little bit if you have 3-player games. That mostly has to do with how you select your titles. In a 2-player game, you're actually not going to play with the titles at all. And so that phase is skipped completely because there's a, you know, lesser degree of complexity with 2 players. Everything else plays pretty much the same way. And Cody and I had an opportunity to play a 2-player game, and it plays differently, but I think we both kind of liked it.
Yeah, it was nice. It played a lot faster, obviously. I do like the titles. It adds an interesting element, but with 2 players, I think it would be kind of lost. With 4 players, it's kind of neat having, you know, well, you're my ally this turn, but, you know, next turn I'm going to screw you, sort of a thing.
Yeah, so I think that having that option of using the titles with a bigger game or just playing with the cards, grabbing 2 decks, sure, and playing with a 2-player game, you really have a lot of versatility with this core set.
Right. 2 players is more of a, I would look at it as a no-frills version of the game, and then a 3 and 4 player would be a more robust rule set to work with.
Absolutely. So it's time once again for that magic moment. Are you ready, Cody?
I'm ready.
All right. A Game of Thrones, the living card game. Buy, try, or deny?
This one's going to be a try for me. I really like the concept of the living card game. Like I said earlier, I think it's a bold step forward in the kind of collectible card game genre. It's not for everyone. Like I said, all of us that played had some background in CCGs, but if you had 4 people that had never really played a Magic or a World of Warcraft card game before, it may take some time, and it might not be for everyone. I think all of us at least had that kind of passing interest that helped us keep learning the rules and get through that. And also, the theme might not be for everyone. I know that later on they're planning a Call of Cthulhu living card game set, and I think that would interest me more because I'm a big theme guy. Again, if theme doesn't matter much to you, then you can pretty much ignore that. But it's a solid rule set. It's got a steep learning curve on it, but it's doable. And I think you should definitely give it a try. All right, John, what do you think? Buy, try, or deny?
Well, this one's kind of tough, and I think I probably have a little bit of a higher opinion of the game than Cody. And maybe it has to do with the fact that I've read some of the books. I would actually disagree with you about the theme element, about it not, you know, not being a real heavily themed game. I think it's very heavily themed going along with this power struggle between families in the books. But, you know, that's just my opinion. Again, probably enhanced by the fact that I've read the books. So I'm also going to give this game a try, but it's real. It's like a try plus.
A try plus plus.
A try plus plus. It's real close to buy. And really, the only reason why I don't put it in the buy category is the collectible card game genre is just, it's got a kind of a high barrier to entry. Even if you're just buying this core set, being able to sit down and get through the rules and read all the text on the cards, it is just not for everybody. But I think that if you could persuade someone who's not a CCG player to try a game, I think, you know, they might find themselves enjoying the gameplay. So it's a really good game. It's very well produced. You know, I'm not sure if you get the best value for your money. I think this is going to retail for $40 or maybe $50. I'm not sure. Well, I'm not really sure with the Fantasy Flight price changes. So you might want to check with your, you know, with Fantasy Flight or with your local, I was about to say local online retailer again.
There you go.
With, you know, an online
your computer's
game.
Right over there. It's local.
With an online game retailer to find out how much. But, you know, you're really only getting four decks of cards and a little board and some tokens in the box.
And a really bad insert.
And a really bad box insert. Maybe you pay a premium for that. But I would give this game a definite try, or if a try plus if we want to start creating new categories.
Well, gamers, that's another episode of Game On in the Books. John, why don't you remind everybody about our contest for this episode?
Yep, we got a great contest going on in our Board Game Geek Guild right now. But first, we wanted to let you know we got a little bit of feedback about the way we choose the winners for our contest from Sam Healy of the Dice Towers.
Oh, great.
Yeah, here's what he had to say.
You stick your hand in a bag and you pull out stuff.
Well, Sam makes kind of a good point there, because we do have tended to use...
First time for everything.
Whoa. you know, we have used kind of a random draw for our contest in the past. But for this contest, we're asking you to name our gaming event.
Right. The GameTacular is not going to work, so you, the listener, will name our gaming event.
Right. Just go to our guild at BoardGameGeek.com, look for the thread that says Episode 4 Contest, and give us a name for our gaming event that we're going to be doing sometime in the next month or two.
And if you have any gaming news, feedback, questions, or anything else interesting, you can always reach us at the Game On Inbox at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
I'm not doing the echo.
Fine. You know how to reach us.
All right, and so I guess that wraps it up for this episode.
I only ask one thing.
Join us in 2 weeks, where we'll be talking about lots of great things, including a review of Wizard's Gambit.
Ooh.
A new card game from Griffin Forge Games. So that'll be in our Buy a Try It or Nice segment. Until then, we'll see you on the forums. Game on. What we would really love is for you, the Game On listeners, to name our game event.
That's right. If you... Why did I cut in? Sorry. I've got nothing. I bring nothing to the table. Blah, blah, games, blah. Oh.